2 Samuel chapter 14, verse 1. Hear now the inerrant, infallible, and inspired word of God. Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, perceived that the king's heart was toward Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa, and fetched thence a wise woman, and said unto her, I pray thee, feign thyself to be a mourner, and put on now mourning apparel, and anoint not thyself with oil, but be as a woman that had a long time mourned for the dead. And come to the king, and speak on this manner unto him. So Joab put the words in her mouth. And when the woman of Tekoa spake to the king, she fell on her face to the ground, and did obeisance, and said, Help, O king. And the king said unto her, What aileth thee? And she answered, I am indeed a widow woman, and mine husband is dead. And thy handmaid had two sons, and they strove together in the field, and there was none to part them, but the one smote the other and slew him. And behold, the whole family is risen against thine handmaid. And they said, Deliver him that smote his brother, that we may kill him for the life of his brother whom he slew. And we will destroy the heir also. And so they shall quench my coal, which is left, and shall not leave to my husband neither name nor remainder upon the earth. And the king said unto the woman, Go to thine house, and I will give charge concerning thee. And the woman of Tekoa said unto the king, My lord, O king, the iniquity be on me and on my father's house, and the king and his throne be guiltless. And the king said, Whosoever saith aught to thee, bring him to me, and he shall not touch thee any more. Then said she, I pray thee, let the king remember the Lord thy God, that thou wouldest not suffer the revengers of blood to destroy any more, lest they destroy my son. And he said, As the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of thy son fall to the earth. Then the woman said, Let thine handmaid, I pray thee, speak one word unto my lord the king. And he said, Say on. And the woman said, Wherefore then hast thou thought such a thing against the people of God? For the king doth speak this thing as one which is faulty, in that the king doth not fetch home again his banished. For we must needs die, and are as water spilt on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. Neither doth God respect any person, yet doth he devise means that his banished be not expelled from him. Now therefore, that I am come to speak of this thing unto my lord the king, it is because the people have made me afraid, and thy handmaid said, I will now speak unto the king. It may be that the king will perform the request of his handmaid. For the king will hear to deliver his handmaid out of the hand of the man that would destroy me and my son together out of the inheritance of the Lord. Then thine handmaid said, The word of my lord the king shall now be comfortable, for as an angel of God, so is my lord the king, to discern good and bad. Therefore the Lord thy God will be with thee. Then the king answered and said unto the woman, Hide not from me, I pray thee, the thing that I shall ask thee. And the woman said, Let my lord the king now speak. And the king said, Is not the hand of Joab with thee in all this? And the woman answered and said, As thy soul liveth, my lord the king, none can turn to the right hand nor to the left from aught that my lord the king hath spoken. For thy servant Joab, he bade me, and he put all these words in the mouth of thine handmaid, to fetch about this form of speech, that thy servant Joab done this thing. Hath thy servant Joab done this thing? And my Lord is wise, according to the wisdom of an angel of God, to know all things that are in the earth. And the king said unto Joab, Behold, now I have done this thing. Go, therefore, bring the young man Absalom again. And Joab fell to the ground on his face and bowed himself and thanked the king. And Joab said, Today thy servant knoweth that I have found grace in thy sight, my Lord, O king, in that the king hath fulfilled the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, Let him turn to his own house and let him not see my face. So Absalom returned to his own house and saw not the king's face. But in all Israel there was none to be so much praised as Absalom for his beauty. From the sole of his foot even to the crown of his head there was no blemish in him. And when he polled his head, for it was at every year's end that he polled it, because the hair was heavy on him, therefore he polled it. He weighed the hair of his head at 200 shekels after the king's weight. And unto Absalom there were born 3 sons and 1 daughter, whose name was Tamar, and she was a woman of a fair countenance. So Absalom dwelt 2 full years in Jerusalem and saw not the king's face. Therefore Absalom sent for Joab to have sent him to the king, but he would not come to him. And when he sent again the second time, he would not come. Therefore he said unto his servants, "See, Joab's field is near mine, and he hath barley there. Go and set it on fire." And Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Then Joab arose and came to Absalom unto his house and said unto him, "Wherefore have thy servants set my field on fire?" And Absalom answered Joab, "Because I sent unto thee, saying, Come hither, that I may send thee to the king to say, Wherefore am I come from Geshur? It had been good for me to have been there still. Now, therefore, let me see the king's face, and if there be any iniquity in me, let him kill me." So Joab came to the king and told him. And when he had called for Absalom, he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king. And the king kissed Absalom. May God add his blessing to the reading and to the hearing of his most holy word. Any red flags going off here? Oh my, there are a number of red flags here, aren't there? All right, so the first thing is Joab comes to this woman and he has a plan. And so he says, now, pray thee, feign thyself. Whenever someone comes to you and says, feign thyself, that's an old English term that means, okay, go here, do this and pretend to be something you're not. What's the answer going to be, folks? The answer should be, no, I won't do that. But again, it is a day of palace intrigue. And so Joab desires to have Absalom come back to Jerusalem. Now, let me ask you just an aside here. How did that work out for Joab and his barley field? Yeah, just think on that for a moment. What do you think Joab is thinking about now, right? Okay, so the woman comes and she's got a long tale to tell, doesn't she? And what is the word of the king? The word of the king is indeed contrary to the law of God. What the king should say is, number one, if your son killed your other son in the field while they were wrestling inadvertently, let him flee to the city of refuge to be judged. That's the law. Or if he laid in wait for him, if he hated him in his heart aforetime, if it could be told that he actually plotted to kill him, he needs to be put to death. That should be the word of the king. Is it the word of the king? No. Now, David has gone now to stretching. He's gone to accommodating. He's gone to tolerating. He's not thinking legally, rationally as a king. He's thinking as a private person, and he cannot afford to do so as a king. There are times when difficult decisions must be made for the sake of the nation rather than for the sake of the individual. And so the word of the king ought to have been to the woman, "Well, your son should have thought about snuffing out your name in Israel and putting out your coal when he rose up to kill his brother." That's when that decision should have been made, and it cannot be made now. It is too late. But what do we see in David? Well, not only in this story here with this woman who feigns to be widowed with 2 dead sons, but we see David even within his own household now. We've already seen it, and now we see it advanced, that David is willing to stretch. He's willing to favor. He's willing to play favorites and to provide what we might call a nepotistic attitude, right? The law applies to everyone else, but not to my sons. Well, this is part of the Lord's pursuing the sword in David's house. Notice that Joab, when he trusted Absalom, ended up being bit. What will happen to David later on, having trusted Absalom? The same thing. The same thing will take place. So whenever someone comes to you and says, "Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to pretend you're going to go and you're going to..." No. No, not lawful. Can't do it. It would have been good counsel for the lady to say to Joab, "General Joab, if you have a case to be made before the king, I suggest you go make it. Make that case before him. Let everything be done openly and above board instead of telling a story. Remember how we eased David into something in the last? Now notice it's the same kind of strategy to ease him into another decision here by this long, tall tale about a supposed widow with two dead sons. All right, so then David perceives what's going on, and so that should have been a red flag for him, but he presses right through the red light, doesn't he? He doesn't say, okay, is the hand of Joab in this? All right, let's just call it to a halt now. Next order of business, please. He doesn't do that. Instead, Joab is there and he speaks to Joab and he says, I will do as you desire. And so now Joab says, well, I know that thou favorest me. Now, the only other thing that I would say here, and it's not in the text, so I'll not be dogmatic on it, but remember that Joab has the goods on David. Now, it's true that David has been exposed, and so Joab's leverage may not be what it used to be. But it is at the request of Joab that Absalom is brought back to the king, to Jerusalem, the city of the king. Now, interestingly, David says he can come back, but let him turn aside to his own house. He shall not see my face. So David recognizes that he at least owes some kind of punishment, some kind of freezing out, some kind of estrangement. But this is not. This seems more like a personal thing than it would a public thing. So David is still not behaving himself rightly concerning his son Absalom. And of course, that's because he loves Absalom, his son. And he has, like Eli before him, placed the love of his sons above the love of God. Okay, so Absalom comes back into town. And David had said, let him depart to his own house and not see my face. I hope you noticed it was the same period, 2 years. Absalom has, it seems, a 2-year cycle in what he's able to bear. And so after 2 years, he calls to Joab and he says, Joab, come see me. Joab says, I don't think I want any part of that. Joab has recognized this might not have been the wisest thing for me to do. I don't think so. Calls him again. Joab, come and see me. Ignores him. And so that's when Absalom sends his servants into the fields of Joab that are next to him, and they light his barley fields on fire. Well, Joab goes to see him then, and he says, well, why are you burning my barley fields down? And notice what Absalom does. Well, it's your fault. You wouldn't come to see me. It's your fault. Had you come to see me, you'd still have barley fields. Isn't that how it works? Very often with willful folks, aren't they able to take the good that you have done and turn it against you? Yeah. And that's what happens here with Absalom and Joab. And so Absalom says, well, had you come to me when I called you, when I summoned you, so that you could go talk to the king for me, then you'd still have barley fields. It's your fault. Well, Joab seems to be bested by that. As wily and as cagey as Joab was, he does Absalom's bidding. And he goes to see the king and to speak to him on Absalom's account. And David finally relents. So I hope you see everything that has gone on here over these last couple of chapters, how it has proceeded, not all at once, but it has proceeded increment after increment after increment to where finally Absalom is back in town and he is restored to full favor with the king. The greatest mistake that anyone could make in a situation like this is the mistake that David makes. And that is what? Well, Absalom has behaved himself badly here, and badly here, and badly here, and badly here, and badly here. But now that I've received him into my favor, he'll be good. We, looking at it from these two chapters, are watching it like a slow train wreck that you can't turn away from. We know what's going to happen. What did David do? He refused to follow the prescriptions of his God. He refused to obey according to his station as king. and instead doted upon his son Absalom and favored him and gave him a break and gave him a consideration, even though he was indeed red-handed kind of guilty. And the further and further this goes down the road, the worse it gets. And so when David receives Absalom and Absalom bows before the king and David kisses him, David seals his own fate. My dear brothers and sisters, it is clear here that David, in refusing to take charge with his son, only tore his own house down. That's a good encouragement to all parents to make sure they take charge with their children. Take charge with them. Insist on them doing the right thing. Yes, be kind, and yes, be forgiving, and yes, give second chances. Do all of that. But do not minimize their sin. Do not turn away from it. Exact from them the kind of contrition and repentance that is commensurate with their crimes. You will only be doing their soul good. Absalom was never called to account, and only some modicum of punishment offered to him. What did Absalom deserve? He deserved to die as a murderer for killing his brother Amnon. But when Absalom saw that weakness in his father, Absalom then insisted to be brought back to Jerusalem. Not enough. Then brought back into favor with David. Not enough. Then to sit at the gate. Not enough. And then to run David out of town, seeking for his life. The strangest thing that we do today, that we are told to do as parents by the society around us, is to concede to our children, and then believe that somehow things will be right. Biblically, we know that's not the way. We must insist for ourselves and for all those under our charge to obey the voice of God. To obey the voice of God. And in our places and station, then, we must ensure that those under our charge do what they can do to obey the voice of God as well. Thus ends the reading, then, of 2 Samuel chapter 14. Let's get